They've thrown everything but my mom at me. Thank God, a tortilla. What? That's what you call it, right? It's soft. It's not hard.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
And God bless the United States of America, and God bless our troops.
Russ Dellinger.
Blue turf and playoffs and cold and snow, maybe, Dan. Oh, God.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Well, it's like being bitten to death by squirrels. A little bite here, a little bite there, a little bite here, a little bite there. All of a sudden, you're dead.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, week 11. Gentlemen, what if I told you that Georgia Tech upset Miami to become the 10th unranked team to upset a top 10 team this season? There were only five last year. The goalposts of said victory ended up in the pool of the Georgia Tech president's mansion.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
What if I told you, A, he's got a pool. B, that's where they decided to throw it. What if I told you there was nearly an 11th, but Indiana held off Michigan, which means it's Indiana that's 10-0 and in the top 10, and Michigan that fell to 500 and was trying to spring the plucky upset. And what if I told you after the game, Kurt Cignetti's daughter got engaged via post-game video board, where her romantic fiance wrote, "Natalie, every day with you is 10-0. Will you marry me?"
So, what do you think? Like, if they lost, the engagement's off.
I know, yeah, right? Remember that?
The proposal.
Remember the Florida State kid who got engaged after they lost to like Jacksonville State a couple years ago?
Yeah.
And he's like, I had the ring, I had the family, I had the photographer. Like, what am I going to, you got to do it, right? Yeah. Every day with you is like 9-1. It's really more attuned to marriage. It's not going 10-0, buddy.
I'm sure. This sure sounds like trying to get on the good side of, father-in-law? Or,
yeah, father-in-law.
Yeah, yeah, father-in-law. Yeah.
10-0 is not possible. If you can get 9-1, yeah, you're a happy man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's Natalie is a prize. I'm sure it is, but...
Yeah.
What if I told you the Holy War turned into the Utah AD looking to put biblical acts on the refs? What if I told you Ole Miss beat Georgia in a game featuring torrential rain, two field stormings, two goalposts ending up at the Oxford Courthouse? Stop by Square Books. Beautiful old court. And a Bulldog team that gained 600 yards plus last year, averaged 1.8 rushing attempts this year. What if I told you Shador Sanders went to Lubbock, threw three touchdowns, rushed for another, and autographed a tortilla? What if I told you the SEC could end up in an eight-way tie at 6-2? And it's not that impossible. We're going to get to that. What if I told you the governor of Louisiana rented a live tiger from someone in Florida, had it wheeled around the stadium, even though they have a live tiger sitting next to the stadium who no longer comes out on the field, all on a day where College Game Day was there and Pat McAfee led or inspired numerous renditions of Neck to be chanted and sung? And the fun part now, the fun part, all while the show also pulled the heartstrings over the death of Kirk Herbstreit's dog, RIP Ben, and then Alabama blew the Tigers out anyway, which means Brian Kelly is unlikely to be in the playoff this year, but Notre Dame is. Pat, what is going on in college football? This was an unbelievable day, and I don't think I got to nearly half of it.
Yeah, what a sport. What a sport, what a weekend. And that's November college football. There is so much going on, and there are so many things at stake since we have a 12-team playoff. It's just fantastic. Heck, you want another one? I ended up via alumni circumstances at the Missouri-Oklahoma game, which probably didn't matter unless Missouri somehow backdoors into the playoff. But the game was decided by back-to-back scoop-and-score defensive touchdowns in the final minutes. Like, Oklahoma has it won off of a fumble they picked up and ran in 40 yards out. Oh, no! Their quarterback, Jackson Arnold, decided to fumble it back, and Missouri runs one in the last minute to win the game. So, everywhere you look, something is happening.
Dan, I was at a wedding.
Yeah, someone's hungover, by the way.
Yeah, I was at a wedding.
Somebody showed up at work hungover. Can we guess who, based on the volume and excitement level of the three voices you've heard so far? Yeah.
Can't you tell how excited I am? So I brought the iPad though to and the laptop to the reception and did what I could do, you know.
Anything for the pod.
That's right. So,
well, how'd that wedding go? Did we get two yeses? I do's, I do.
We got two yeses. There was beautiful. It was in Lexington, or right outside of Lexington, and it was on like kind of around a horse farm, and it was nice. It was a good wedding. Not as well timed as I would have hoped. Right in the middle of Saturday in November
you
in
need
football
a nap
season.
But during the show, feel free.
I may crawl underneath. I'm at University of Cincinnati now because I drove up here after this morning. We were staying in Lexington, so it's nearby, flying out of Cincinnati, or my wife was. And so I'm at the University of Cincinnati now doing the pod. So I'm in the administrative offices, and I might just crawl under this desk, you know, and just like Costanza, you know, make a little cubby and take a nap.
I mean, I think Huggins did that when he was there.
Check the bottom drawer on the left. Huggins might have left a little pick me up for you.
I don't need it. I don't need any of that, Dan. Okay. Believe me, after the last couple days.
Hair of the dog. I don't know. Whatever. You got to power through, man.
All right. I'm trying.
Let me before we get to the individual games, let me posit this little thing. Now, for whatever reason this is, it might be circumstance, it might be happenstance, it might be this is just how we're going to get somewhere. But for the last, well, probably like 50 years with a couple breaks like Bobby Bowden or Steve Spurrier or something, but certainly the last 10 or so, the sport was run and dominated by coaches who were perpetually angry. These were very serious, serious men in very serious pursuits. And I am not denigrating that or speaking negatively to that because it worked. But it was coaches who were like fired up. Every day was a battle of centimeters. And if we get a little bit better and a tough on your players and all of this stuff. And that's how you won in college football. And again, all due respect for the Nick Sabans and Urban Meyers and all these guys. But the guys were working themselves to heart attacks. And I mean, it was insane. This is what they were doing. And fine. Yesterday, at least, was about the showman. Lane Kiffin, I mean, they 28-10 over Georgia. His defense was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Colorado, Deion Sanders, they go into Lubbock, go down 13-0, and come back and win 41-27. They're getting thrown. They're getting not just tortillas thrown at them, but they said batteries, a vape, a beer bottle.
Batteries?
Right. Yeah, everything was coming down.
That would hurt, by the way.
Joey McGuire was saying, I think it was battery. I don't know. A beer bottle.
Yeah.
Water bottles. I mean, and Joey McGuire, Texas Tech coach, is trying to say stop throwing stuff, all that. Tortillas are fun. Everything else is not fun.
Yeah.
Deion Sanders' reaction, not irate. They were throwing everything but my mama at me. Fantastic. Kirk Cignetti is walking around now, the proud dad of a bride to be. Google me, right? He walks in last year from James Madison at the Indiana basketball game. It says Purdue sucks, and everyone cheers. And no offense to Purdue, but yeah. And then he says, but so doesn't Michigan and Ohio State. And 10 months later, at the time he says this, Michigan is the 15-0 reigning national champs, or on their way to being it. They beat Michigan, and now they're going to Columbus at 10-0. again, maybe it's just one weekend, but this was the weekend for the hey man, we're going to have some fun and we're going to talk and we're going to do whatever and let's have fun and win games. What do you think, Pat?
About it. Yeah, no, it's incredible. And for Lane Kiffin to not just beat Kirby Smart, but beat him down as badly as anybody not named Alabama has beaten Kirby Smart since 2016. That was impressive. And yes, I've said Lane Kiffin's an unserious coach. That was a very serious performance by his team. That was a, we want to go to the playoff performance. So kudos to him. What Deion Sanders is doing is unbelievable. And man, oh man, I wish I would have kept all the tweets from last year from everybody who wanted to say what a clown he was and how this is going to all blow up and he's not even there to coach, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, they right now, they keep winning. They're playing in the Big 12 championship. They've got, it's, the path is set for them. They control their own destiny. But then Kurt Cignetti, to me, this is the, I can't think of a better coaching job I've seen. I, you know, I'll have to really scrub my memory here, but to come in to Indiana, of all places, talk that noise, and then more than just back it up. I mean, they are 10-0. It's a dominant 10-0. They had some tight moments, finally, against Michigan, but they control the game. They got up 17-3 and then just controlled the rest of the way, held on, win the game, and now you're looking at the most ridiculous cataclysm game I can remember in the Big Ten, which is Indiana and Ohio State in 2 weeks. So, yeah, bring it on. These guys have been fun. Their teams have been fun. The season has been fun. And it's just getting better every week.
Yeah, it was a remarkable performance for Colorado, which was down early, right? First quarter, 13-0, I think, yeah. And to come back and do what they did on the road against a Texas Tech team that had just upset Iowa State. And like Pat said, the Big 12 race now, right, is Colorado's. The path is clear. Iowa State losing again to Kansas kind of now set them up to control their own destiny. And in a similar way, Ole Miss with maybe the college football playoff. I mean, I don't know if anybody has a better win on the season, right, than beating Georgia by 18 points. You know, obviously Alabama beat Georgia at home and had them up big. And so those are two of the best wins in the season. So all of a sudden, yeah, Ole Miss kind of feels like it controls its fate, too, to the playoff. The SEC is just a mess at the top. It's unbelievable right now what we're looking at when it comes to the SEC standings and how almost certainly, guys, we're going to end in some kind of tiebreaker for the team or teams to advance to the championship game. I mean, you've got, what, five teams at 2-loss and three teams at 1-loss. And some of them play each other, right? So Georgia and Tennessee play this week. So it's just in Texas A&M play. So we're going to, man, they are bunched up and it could be wild, really wild down the stretch here in that league to sort out things.
Well, and then nobody else plays.
Mm. Right.
Okay. So let me lay this out. Right. Nick Bromberg, our great college football writer. Go ahead, Pat. Do you have something to add on that before I get to this?
No, I was just going to say this is probably where Dear Leader Sankey comes sailing in and says we need seven teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, we need everybody in. Okay. LSU is not out. I mean, they're set 3-2. They have 2 losses. They're at Florida, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma. Can they win those three? Sure can. They're 6-2. Okay. Missouri at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, Arkansas. That at South Carolina game isn't going to be easy, but if they win that, they're 6-2 in the league. Okay. Alabama at Oklahoma, Auburn. They're already 4-2. They're 6-2 in the league. Ole Miss plays at Florida, Mississippi State. They're 4-2 in the league. There you go, 6-2. Georgia, they have one game left again in the SEC. They are 5-2. They host Tennessee next weekend. Win that game, and they're 6-2. Tennessee has 2 games remaining at Georgia, Vanderbilt. If Georgia beats Tennessee at home, and we don't know if Nico's going to play, got hurt, didn't play the second half.
Right.
They're now 6-2. They beat, they're 5-1. They beat Vanderbilt, lose to Georgia. They're 6-2 in the league. Okay. So they're, those are all 6-2s. Texas is 4-1 in the league. They're at Arkansas, Kentucky. Okay. They could win those and be 6-1. And then they're at A&M. Let's give A&M that game. So then Texas would be 6-2. Texas A&M is at Auburn, and then they host Texas. They're 5-1. Let's say Auburn upsets Texas A&M, or conversely, Arkansas or Kentucky upset Texas. And then whoever gets upset between Texas A&M and Texas, they win the big game at the end of the year between Texas, Texas A&M. 6-2. So you could have Tennessee. Now, I did not, any of the list of those games I just suggested, other than Missouri winning at South Carolina and somebody upsetting Texas or Texas A&M, find me a result that isn't.
Yeah.
I'm not coming up with crazy stuff here. Tennessee, no. Texas A&M, Texas, that's 3. Georgia, 4. Ole Miss, 5. Alabama, 6. Missouri, 7. LSU, 8. All 8 teams would be 6-2 in the conference. Who's going to Atlanta?
Fun. Got to get that tiebreaker out, Dan.
Flipping coins, baby. Flipping coins.
The tiebreaker is a lot on your. It depends a lot. Multiple tiebreakers, I think, are on your conference strength of schedule, basically. Goes to your conference strength of schedule, I believe. And then, you can get way down that list to, like, what, number 5 or number 6,
which is. Draw a lot.
You know, yeah.
Draw a lot.
You can get ready for it, Dan. Paul Feinbaum, SEC Network show, maybe ABC, primetime. Let's do it.
You remember in Friday Night Lights where they flipped the coins to the playoffs, the high school playoffs at a truck stop in Texas? They could do this in, you know, somewhere in like maybe the, you know, a Waffle House in Hoover, Alabama. Draw lots. What in the world? An 8-way tie? And I need like one mild upset, Missouri at South Carolina. I'm going to guess South Carolina's favorite in that game. And one real upset. And you got an 8-way tie. Otherwise, you could have a 7-way tie for second place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of other possible ties. I mean, we can root for the granddaddy of all ties is an 8-way tie. We'll settle for a good 6-way tie that sends everybody diving into the protocols for the tiebreakers.
There are 6 tiebreakers now. I got them in front of me here. Head number 1, head-to-head competition.
How do you sort that out with 8
among
teams?
The tied team? Well, yeah, that's, I mean, you would have to go to number 2, which is you'd have to get the record versus all common conference opponents among the tied teams. So the record against all common SEC opponents, and then number 3 is their record against the highest play, the best placed common opponents in the conference standings, well, proceeding from the top through, right? Yeah. And then number 4 is cumulative conference winning percentage of all conference opponents. So all your opponents, their cumulative winning percentage. Now, you would think that one would separate at that point. Yeah. You wouldn't have to go much further. But if you do, number 5 is the capped relative total scoring margin versus all SEC opponents. Surely that will separate things. But of course, there is number 6, random draw of the tied teams.
Capped? What do you mean capped?
I'm guessing it only goes to a certain, you know, the scoring margin. 50. Yeah. Yeah.
Only they don't want anyone certain, like right. Trying to roll up 60 points the last week.
Right.
Paul!
Right.
Good thing they got Vanderbilt in this league. Someone smart can figure this thing out. They got Vanderbilt's role is to supply the mathematician.
That's right. Yeah. Some grad school class down there in quantum something or another has been handed this assignment.
As a fan of situational anarchy, basically peaceful anarchy, although this may not be peaceful. This may not be peaceful.
No.
Could not be happier with an 8-way tie.
I mean, the staggering thing, like you said, it's not like outlandish.
Not at all. No. Not at all.
You said two upsets.
Missouri would have to win at South Carolina, and then either
that would be an upset. Right, probably.
Arkansas, like, or Kentucky would have to beat Texas. or Auburn would have to be Texas A&M. That's how you get the eight-way. And then what I would consider a flip-em game, Texas at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And then everything else, I mean, Tennessee, Georgia. So Georgia would have to beat Tennessee. I'm guessing Georgia would be favored. I certainly think Tennessee can win that game. But the other parts are not quite doable. And you'd be so. Well, you asked for a 16-team league.
Yeah. 16-team league, but still playing an 8-game league schedule.
Yeah, okay. That's where you can get in trouble there.
That's why
certain people are pushing hard for, you know, the SEC to start that nine games up. And I think eventually they get there, you know, but it's definitely needed. How about the other leagues too? We're gonna have some interesting stuff. In some of these other leagues, the ACC race got kind of opened up, and there's some tie. Yeah, Clemson and Miami now, but, you know, tied, and they don't play each other.
Right
in the regular season, SMU atop the league. Miami's loss, obviously, creating that little cluster there, and we could have something similar, guys, in the Big Ten, right? I mean, we could have three. One loss, or maybe even four, one loss Big Ten teams all tied and bunched at the top.
Yeah. No, it's just there's plenty of mayhem, I think, potentially still to come.
So much more mayhem than before. So when we wrote that to the BCS and we tried to say the play, they'd say, oh, you're going to ruin the regular season. Like, no, more games will mean more, which is a good line by probably Jeff Passan wrote that. But it was a good line. And I believed it, but man, does it look good now?
Yeah,
it turned out. So Miami fascinates me. They beat Wake. They have two games left. They beat Wake. They beat Syracuse. They're 11-1. Their only loss is by 5 points at Georgia Tech. Do they get left out?
I mean, it's not out of the question. I will say, like, their eye test is not great. Their non-conference schedule is not great, mostly because Florida has, you know, fallen apart. But they were all but beaten by Virginia Tech. They were all but beaten by Cal. They were all but beaten by Duke. And then they finally were beaten by Georgia Tech. So, I mean, they have been living on the edge for a month, really, maybe more than a month. And you know, I think that you're looking at 9-1, and it's a great record, great job, but it's not built on a lot. Winning at Louisville stands out as by far their best win right now, and there's not a lot else on the resume. Right now, I would have them out.
Yeah, we talked about Miami before with their strength of schedule or lack thereof. They may finish the season without a win over a team that finishes the season in the top 25. And in their best hope for one, Syracuse, at the end of the season, lost this past week. So now Syracuse probably won't be ranked. This could be trouble. And if you look at maybe who they'd be competing with, you know, for a spot into the playoff, you got, you know, Notre Dame, right? And then maybe a couple of SEC two-loss teams Alabama,
two-loss Armada,
Ole Miss.
From the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so it's hard to see it happening unless they can, you know, get into that championship
game. They
got to
get in the championship game. Now, I guess my thing here is, this is going to be painful. I'm sorry if I didn't get it right before because these tiebreakers, but they did, Miami did beat Louisville and Clemson lost to Louisville.
Yeah.
So does that give Miami, is Miami then in? I mean, I think that might do it, right?
That might be that tiebreaker for them.
And Georgia Tech is not on the Clemson schedule.
Right. The best place common opponent. You had the ACC tiebreakers like last week.
I'm going to have to spend time like trying to memorize this stuff. But I'm guessing that Miami still has, you got to get in that game. And at this point, and SMU just trots in and steals the thunder.
But here's one definitely to keep an eye on. We talked about it before. It's becoming more real now. Boise getting a top four spot because they're ranked ahead of SMU in the first playoff rankings.
Yeah.
And now SMU becomes the lead dog in the ACC. If SMU and Boise State keep winning, does Boise jump up to number four?
Could you leave an undefeated ACC champion out of that top four? If SMU does, like SMU could go all the way. They're undefeated, right?
They lost to BYU.
Oh, yeah, the BYU. I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're undefeated in conference play.
SMU, mm-hmm. I don't think SMU, if they went out, though, would end up the 12 seed.
Well,
no, they wouldn't be a 12.
Yeah, they could be like a 6 seed or 7 seed.
The fifth automatic bid at like a 7, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Right, right. Yep. But Boise would be, would get a first round bye, potentially. Yeah,
I wish they would play. For 10 million reasons, I wish the second round was on campus.
In the blue turf? Can you imagine a Boise State playoff game?
Yeah, like Alabama at Boise?
35,000 fans in there going, oh.
Oh, Bama had Boise on the blue turf. Ashton Gentry on the other side. Oh man, Jalen Milroe and Genty and blue turf and playoffs and cold and snow, maybe, Dan. Oh, God.
Well, it's completely unfair to those guys. And it just, jeez, can we just get this part fixed?
Dan, it will be, I don't know what, Fiesta Bowl, Peach Bowl, something like that. One of your favorite bowls, Dan.
One of my favorite bowls. all right, let's go to break, and we'll talk more specifics on these games. All right, I do want to get into some specifics about a couple of these games. Ole Miss's defense was incredible yesterday in that upset. They gave up over 600 yards last year when Georgia just crushed them. Georgia ran for over 300. Lane Kiffin said after, he's like, we got to get better players. And to my point earlier about the showman, it's about the players, man. A lot of guys can coach football. Yep. There's a lot of ways to coach football. If you got the talent, you can win. And the talent is everywhere now. So, you know, you watched Indiana and Michigan play. You didn't say, boy, Indiana's doing this with tricks. And, you know, like they had better, like, Ole Miss had better players in this game. And defensively, they just completely shut Georgia down. Carson Beck was sacked 5 times, had a pick. The weather was bad, but Georgia had 245 yards, 59 net yards rushing, 2 fumbles lost. As much as Lane Kiffin's about the pyrotechnics and the offense and the quarterbacks and all the stuff, this was a defensive game, and it was won by great defensive players that Ole Miss went out and got. And you can do that now quickly. You can take a whoop and the year before and say, we got to get this defense in order. And voila, the defense is in order. Because look, what was Ole Miss's record last year? Was Indiana's? Was Colorado's? There weren't a whole lot of wins there. There's a whole bunch this year because they went out and got guys. It's fascinating how quick you can not just get some players, but get better players than even Georgia. At least they did on Saturday. What'd you think, Pat?
Yeah. I mean, look. They've become an excellent team up front defensively, and that is pretty much overnight. Their last 3 games, they have 22 sacks. They had 9 sacks against Oklahoma, 8 against Arkansas, and then 5 against Georgia after having 0 sacks against Georgia last year. They lead the nation in sacks. And, yeah, that's just going out and saying, we got to load up and get some better players at those positions. And coaching them up and turning them loose, it's really impressive. I've got to give Kiffin credit for building a much more complete team. And I was, you know, I'm very skeptical after the Kentucky loss and then after the LSU loss. But since then, since they got backed up against the playoff wall, they've been fantastic. They have been awesome. And, yeah, week off and then Florida and Mississippi State. I'll be very surprised if they're not sitting there 10-2, and we'll see where that fits into the mix.
You know, when and I did get to watch a decent amount of this game. I saw the weather turn, terrible kind of early in the second half. And usually in a game like that where it gets like bad, right, weather-wise, and you got to really stick to the ground game, and it's all about kind of the trenches and all this stuff. It's a game like a Georgia usually beats an Ole Miss in. You know, but check out these stats that really, to me, kind of define the line of scrimmage battle. Ole Miss had 5 sacks against Georgia and held Georgia to 59 yards of total rushing on the day. So just all around dominant. And that front seven is, you know, mostly right transfers. Most of Ole Miss's team is transfers that Lane went out and Walker Jones, a collective director there, and got. I think it's talked about it a lot on the pod, right? $10, $11, $12 million in Lane knew over the last couple of years he needed to get better players, especially on the offensive and defensive lines. And we saw it quite literally pay off on the field. And look how close Ole Miss is to being undefeated, right? I mean, they blew the game at LSU. They lost in overtime. And then the Kentucky game, you know, was real tight as well at home. This team could make some noise if they get in the playoff.
You know, we talked just last show and about the transfer portal and how, you know, if they're trying to slow down the transfer portal. And I think Pat made an accurate point. Fans don't like the amount of player movement, right? I wonder if it's just framed wrong. Like, it's like everyone's sitting there. They're standing on 16 in blackjack. Like, I'm worried about what I'm going to lose rather than looking at what I can gain. Because the transfer portal has created so many teams with the chance that, like, hey, next year you can be really good.
Yeah.
And it's been framed as look what you're going to lose rather than look what I'm going to get. If I'm a fan of Florida or Florida State or Michigan or any team that's not having a great year, I'm like, I love the transfer portal. I just wonder if that sentiment, which I think is accurate because it's been sold as like, oh, you get a good player and someone steals them. Well, you can steal too. Like, how you play in this game? Like, oh, this sucks. The dealer got 21. Well, you should have hit. then he would have busted on the next one. I wonder if it'll ever get that, because it's absolutely, I mean, Lane Kiffin was out. We just got better guys this year. We went out and got them. And if it was pro sports, you'd be like, hell yeah, our GM's a genius. Not, we got to stop this free agency thing.
It's a big talking point right now, Dan, you know, in this new era coming, the rev share era, how we're going to handle contracts. You know, will contracts be more binding? Will there be limitations to player movement? Will there be buyouts in player rev share contracts with schools? Early indicators are schools are going to maybe attempt to do that. But if you talk to many legal experts and lawyer types, they'll tell you that it's going to be hard.
Probably can't do it. But I just think that's the movement that schools want to go with, because that's what they perceived would be the problem. And instead, what they perceived to be a problem, and that's so much of this debate on this stuff, is what we thought was going to happen has been, it's turned out the opposite. And we're all stunned by it. As much as I was like, hey, I think this will level the playing field, I didn't think it would be this. And I wasn't, I thought, geez, every year transfer, I don't know if that's a good idea. Well, it's working. And so if you're Georgia, yeah, I don't want player movement, because I'm going to get the recruits and I'm going to lock them up if I'm Alabama or those schools. But if I'm the other schools, I'm sitting there saying, if I'm Indiana's AD, what the hell? Or anybody else in the Big Ten going, hey, we can be Indiana. We can never be Ohio State. We're never getting five-star, but everybody can be Indiana. And then guess what? They're having as much, if not a lot more fun right now than Ohio State is.
Yeah. That, you know, the Indiana thing, again, one of the, you know, all the layers of how incredible that is their team is largely Sun Belt, Mid-American Conference, Conference USA transfers. I mean, they got a couple, like a guy from Wake Forest, a guy from North Carolina, but it's mostly James Madison. James Madison relocated from Harrisonburg, Virginia to Bloomington, Indiana, and is 10-0 in the Big Ten. It's freaking incredible. I mean, like Ole Miss, their guys are getting, and one of the reasons people were, you know, so uptight about Ole Miss, they're getting guys from within the SEC. You know, and other SEC schools are like, oh, Lane's getting our guys. But I mean, they're defensive guys they brought in from Florida, Arkansas, Texas A&M. But Indiana just went and got them from the group of five.
Yeah,
it's remarkable what they're doing. Probably speaks a lot to the coaching that's going on there.
All right, hats off to Jalen Milroe. 4 more touchdowns again this year against LSU. Just couldn't stop. It was like Cam Newton. There's times he looks like Cam Newton when he's running. He just is just too good. that run pass option when you got Jalen going. But I wanted to point out for Brian Kelly, Ross spent a lot of time covering LSU. How bad is this for Brian Kelly? I mean, they got crushed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, over the years, I don't think people realize that don't live there in Louisiana and not around LSU football every day or every week or often is how much they hate Alabama. And how much Alabama has just been a thorn for so many years, decades going back to Baton Rouge. Alabama was the team that often stood in the way of getting to the SEC championship game or even before the championship game, winning a conference title, getting to the national title. They have just been in the way so many years. And obviously, through the generations. And it is just a deep-rooted hate. And for Alabama to go into Tiger Stadium, where they've had so much success, Alabama has in there. I think we talked about it earlier in the week on the preview show about how much success that Bear Bryant and Nick Saban had at Tiger Stadium and how many games they won there. And for Kalen in his first year to go in there and not just win and continue that sort of legacy, but just dominate. An absolute dominating performance against an LSU defense that I think so many people thought was improved, just got ripped apart by Jalen Milroe. And he continues to be a fascinating player and just an electric player.
LSU might have finally found the coach that can't win a national championship there, right? Saban did, Les Miles did, even Coach O did. But now, I don't know, BK. You know, the expectations are so high there, and sometimes I think unrealistically high or unreasonably high. But then they keep winning national championships every decade. You know, they show up and win one, and so it's like, yeah, okay, we should be able to do it. But you know, Brian Kelly's record is good there. It's just not good enough, and this season really seems to have kind of gotten away from them. You know, I think Ross pointed out a couple weeks ago, they were pretty dang fortunate just to beat South Carolina and to beat Ole Miss, you know, and then they've had the losses, and to get just annihilated at home by Alabama is a bad turn of events for Brian Kelly.
How you lose matters. And this was just ugly. And yeah, it is unreasonable to win the national title, but that's why he went there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and go back through the years to these coaches at LSU in year three, right? LSU's known, obviously, as a place where you can get talent, right? East Texas, Louisiana. I mean, they are, as they say, growing on trees down there, especially at the skill positions. Like, it's incredible. So coaches often come in, and they have fairly quickly, you can go back through the generations, success. And I want to go back through some of these generations. Year three for coaches at LSU, go all the way back to the 60s. Dan, Charles McLennan was 8-2-1, won the Sugar Bowl and finished in the top seven in his third year. Jerry Stovall was 8-3-1, finishing in the top 10. Bill Arnsparger, 1986, was his third year and last year as coach, 9-3, Sugar Bowl. And about the only ones you didn't have were guys like Curly Hallman, right, that failed. But then you go to Jerry DiNardo, year three, 9-3. Nick Saban, 8-5, but that followed a 10-3 SEC championship game and a national championship game the next year. Les Miles, 12-2 in year three. And how about Ed Orgeron in year three in Baton Rouge, 15-0 in national title? So that's a lot of expectation. And we know why it's there.
9-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's true.
I just think it's different. I mean, he may end up 9-3. He's got at Florida, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He better go 9-3. If he loses to Vandy, I don't know. On the flip, the school he left that he could have stayed at forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're 8-1. Notre Dame's 8-1. Yes, the NIU loss is inexplicable. But like, if they kick a field goal and sneak through that, everyone forgets it. Listen, I mean, they beat Florida State, and I get it. But I'm going to run through these scores. Florida State 52-3. They beat Navy 51-14. They beat Georgia. They went to Georgia Tech, won 31-13. Same team that just, you know, with Miami. They beat Stanford 49-7. beat Louisville by a touchdown, beat Purdue 66-7. That's what basically what Ohio State just did. They won at Kyle Field. They also got a Miami-Ohio victory in there. Like, they're rolling. And they got Virginia. They're playing Army in Yankee Stadium, and then they got at USC. And Marcus Freeman is got a team, and he's got a path to the playoff, and he has a path to the playoff every single year. And it sure as hell doesn't involve eight-way ties. like maybe your ceiling is higher and you can win a national title at LSU. Certainly you can. But, man, life at Notre Dame ain't too bad.
It is not. It's not in the, you know, three-year measuring contest between Brian Kelly and Notre Dame. Notre Dame's measuring up a lot better right now. I mean, they are sitting in a great spot. This playoff, a 12-team playoff, just plays to their advantages, even if they can't get a first-round bye. So what? And Marcus Freeman, yes, if he can just rinse out that bad loss every year, he'd be a hero. As it is, he's doing pretty good.
Good enough. He was insinuating that they could host a playoff game. His comments after the game was like, next week's our last guaranteed chance to play in this stadium, so it's going to be special. But, you know, so they certainly are projecting that if they win the next three, they could get to eight and host a playoff game. And, hey, this is working out very well. I think only Oklahoma fans hate their former coach more than Notre Dame fans.
Notre Dame, yeah.
Although it's a pretty close contest. Deep Sooner, who sometimes he has the crazy rants. He texted me the other day to tell me that he had just spent like 2 hours analyzing how Lincoln Riley actually is a terrible quarterbacks coach somehow, and he had mathematical proof. Based on Miller Moss and Jalen Hurts' last four games. I was like, okay, I know it's open season on Lincoln, but yeah, how many Heisman?
When your own quarterbacks are that bad, I guess you just go looking at other
people. Yeah, but he's like, it's problematic. Like, he needs therapy. Deep Sooner needs therapy. And he stopped drinking years ago, which was good. Mm. We all applauded that. But maybe he should take it back up. I don't know. But this is how angry. So Notre Dame fans, they want three things. They want to tell you that they went to Notre Dame. They want to tell you that their team is good, and they want to tell you that Brian Kelly's team sucks. And number two and three are not in that order necessarily. Number one is
right.
Number one always is. Two and three. Not necessarily there. All right. Finally, this BYU, man.
Oh, boy.
Talk about a wagon that just keeps going. Oof. I mean, they are beat in the Holy War. This was an incredible football game. First off, the uniforms.
Yeah.
Bright blue, bright red. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, it was fantastic.
They had this stat. There's just, you could sense the anger, all the different stuff going on. And then the intertwining is so great. Like, Kyle Whittingham played at BYU. I remember when he made the big decision. And then he got offered both the BYU job and the Utah job. And he took the Utah job. And like, they had something where a Whittingham family member has been involved in like 60 years of this rivalry between his dads, his uncles, him. Like, then Kalani Sitake like coached under Whittingham. Now he's the BYU coach. He played at BYU. It goes back and forth. They were hitting. They were hitting. This thing was physical. It was intense. Rice Eccles was electric. And Utah has got this game won, and BYU set for their first loss, and they have this incredible drive at the end to kick a field goal. Very controversial holding call, defensive secondary holding against Utah when Utah got a sack that would have ended the game, set the Utes off, including their athletic director, who he said, I'm not proud to be the cheated. Big 12.
The game was cheated. Stolen from them.
We were cheated. Stolen. They were stolen. Yeah. It was disgusting.
I'm not happy to be in the Big 12, but not tonight. Okay, fair enough. It was a tough call at that spot. It was a tough call. I'm not going to lie. But BYU still had to roll down the field and get to field goal range. And there was a phantom face mask. There's a million calls in a game.
Yeah, that could go.
There's a phantom right. face mask yeah. on BYU early in the game that led to a Utah, that continued a Utah drive. So, but that's what we want. We want the spite. We want the anger. We want the viciousness. We want it all. And we're getting it with this BYU team that just, that's all right. We're just going to keep winning. Kalani Sitake, nice guy. Just keep smiling. Team's tough. He's tough. Team is mean. Yeah. He's like, refs, they got a job. You know, can't get them all. Ha ha. We win.
Well, Sitake's a very likable guy. Great personality. And he's not going to be one of those guys, I think, that's drawn into a spitting contest. The fans will do that plenty on their own. But, boy, Mark Harlan, I've never heard an AD come out and just burn a officiating crew like that publicly.
A press conference, before. Too. He
press conference.
He sat
walked
down.
Into, Go walked ahead. In, sat down, fired, and then like gets up and leaves. And then they have the rest of the Utah press conference. I mean, woo.
It's like one of those and presidential briefings where everyone's yelling out, hey, right. He just keeps going.
Yeah, like right. I didn't like the call. You can throw the flag, but in that situation, I didn't like it. But as you said, Utah then had several plays in which they could have stopped BYU, and they didn't. And BYU goes down, scores, and that's now two games that in the last 10 seconds, 15 seconds, they've pulled out. Oklahoma State, they were beat through a touchdown pass with, I think, 10 or 15 seconds left, and then kick a field goal here, 3 seconds left. So there's a little team of destiny about BYU, but all credit to them. I mean, they have become must watch. And you want to tell me, I mean, how many people will watch a BYU Colorado championship game if it comes to that? Please.
Man, that would be something. You know, it was a flag, right? It was a penalty. You could slow it down. You could see he held. But in that spot, and I always, it's tough to call something like that, not only in that spot, but so far away from the play, so far kind of removed from the ball. You never know. I mean, maybe it did impact the play, but it was a tough one. And I'm sure we'll see. I'm assuming we'll see disciplinary action from the Big 12 conference office. And the Big 12 office has faced some. They've had an interesting season, right? The Big 12 officiating. We saw more, I think, complaints, public complaints, maybe from Texas Tech after their game against Colorado. And obviously, we saw complaints from Texas Tech about the headset situation, the non-encrypted headset situation earlier this year. So, interesting stuff going on there. But we don't see that often from an athletic director. Take the days before the head coach comes up there and just eviscerate publicly the officials in targeting kind of the league too, right? Just like we're happy to be in the Big 12, but not right now or something like that. You know, I mean, he was hot.
Yeah. The fine for that one should be a doozy.
Yeah. It's not an off the cuff comment there. All right. We'll be back with small sample Heisman, and we're going to say something nice or try. All right. They like handing out the Heisman at the end of the year. We want to hand it out every single week. Who's got a Heisman Trophy winner this week? An excellent performance. Perhaps a player we did not mention. Ross, you're... Well, Ross, well, I mean to say, yeah. Ross, you get a small sample Heisman for fighting through this thing. You've done pretty well.
Thank you, Dan.
Been attentive.
Yeah. Wow. Enthusiastic. Okay. I'm usually not lucid. That way, huh? No. Maybe I should be more hungover more often, I guess.
It's a strategy. It's a strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a small sample Heisman for a guy that might win the Heisman at the end of the year, Dylan Gabriel of Oregon. The Ducks rolled to another win over Maryland. They're 10-0, I believe. Yeah, 10-0. Right now, and path is there for the Big Ten championship and a first round bye. Not just that, and maybe the number one seed, obviously, in the country. And you know, he didn't have this great passing game. He threw three passing touchdowns. He had only 180 yards passing, but he did set the NCAA record for all time touchdowns. I believe the NCAA record. Remember, he's a 6-year player and continues to lead lead Oregon and do things on the ground too. He had, I think, 30 yards rushing too. He's a versatile player who can gives you that element on the ground as well. And so my small sample Heisman goes to Mr. Gabriel.
I'm doubling up on my small sample Heisman. Two quarterbacks that came into the week questionable, weren't sure whether they were going to play. They both played. Their teams had huge victories, and they were workhorses. Bryson Daly, my guy at Army, weren't sure he was going to play, missed the last game. 36 carries and 160-some yards against North Texas as Army stays undefeated. They finally fell behind for the first time, 3-0, but they won 14-3. Their defense is actually really good and doesn't get much credit. But 36 carries for 153 yards, two touchdowns for him. But then also Haynes King at Georgia Tech. Weren't sure he was going to play. He'd missed the last two games. He comes in against Miami, 20 carries for 93 yards. 6 of 6 passing, not a lot, but did it enough. One touchdown there. So two quarterbacks that rose to the occasion coming off the injury list.
All right, adding to that, Pat, because I was going to mention Army, they had a drive starting in the third quarter yesterday. It's 7-3 against North Texas. Like, it is danger zone, five alarms, fire, the whole thing. This is the drive, okay? Daly runs for 5. Udo runs for 3. Daly runs for 5. Udo runs for 3. Daly runs for 2. Daly pass complete to Short for 7. Short runs for 8. Udo runs for 8. Daly runs for 17. Daly runs for 2. Daly runs for 3. Daly runs for 1. Timeout. Short runs for 4. Udo runs right for 4. There's a penalty. Stewart runs for 7. Short runs for 10. End of third quarter. We're still going. Daly runs for 4. Daly runs for 6. Udo runs for 3. Daly runs for 3. Daly runs for 1. Daly runs for 2. Okay? That was a 21 play, 94 yard, 13 minute and 54 second touchdown drive.
21 plays.
It is 7-3. They are on their own 6-yard line. I should have set that up. Midway, like late in the middle of the third quarter, like, look out. And they just eliminate basically a quarter of the game.
Golly.
Texas, yeah. North Texas gets the ball back with in the middle of the fourth quarter. 11 minutes left of the fourth quarter, down 2 scores. That is Army football. I mean, unreal. Yeah.
Well, it's like being bitten to death by squirrels. A little bite here, a little bite there, a little bite here, a little bite there. All of a sudden, you're dead.
All of a sudden, you don't have an arm. Yeah. Like, what happened to that arm?
Two 10-yard plays. Wasn't there like a 14? I mean, yeah. Oh, that was like 117. Yeah. Yeah. That was a little too efficient there. Unbelievable. Army football. Incredible. All right. I am going to go with Mekhi Hughes, running back, Tulane. The Waves are 8-2. They routed Temple 52-6. Hughes went 19 carries, 153 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Tulane has a chance to win the American Athletic Conference. And according to podcast lawyer favorite Craig Mordock, the big belief down there amongst the Tulane faithful is they're hoping, it didn't work out last night because they need BYU to lose. They're looking for chaos to hit the Big 12 at the end of the year. And like everyone to start losing, and like a 3 or 4 loss Big 12 team wins it. And Tulane gets in at 11-2 as the 5th best conference champ. Okay. Now I consider these small odds, but there's still hope.
Yeah.
They got hope down there in New Orleans, and they got a hell of a team. And what I love about this playoff is there's a bunch of drunks down in New Orleans sitting around a tailgate concocting this scenario and convincing themselves it could happen, because it could. We don't know. Imagine if somehow the Big 12 cannibalized itself and did not get in. So behalf of Tulane, I don't think you're going to make the playoff. I don't think I think you're going to get BYU Colorado in a huge game, but congrats on still having a dream. You still got a chance. So I go with that. All right. Can we say something nice?
Yeah. Yeah, I can say something nice. And I'm just going to say about, I'm saying something nice about college football in general. Like I said, I ended up at Mizzou, Oklahoma. A game that at the beginning of the year looked pretty sexy, but by the time it got here, especially on Oklahoma's side. But you can't tell the fans that these games don't matter, because they do. And a lot of Oklahoma fans showed up for the game. Incredibly proud fan base. They're 5-4, doesn't matter. They're coming to the game. They're traveling. They got their tickets. They're not selling them. They're showing up. And then Missouri fills the stadium. Missouri, yeah, still in the hunt in the SEC, but they've been a little bit disappointing this year by what their preseason expectations. Doesn't matter. Everybody shows up. Great atmosphere, great scene, tailgates for miles. Robust, fun atmosphere all over town the night before. Robust, you know, all day. And this is playing out all over the place. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to be in the playoff contention. Now, we talk a lot about that, and we should, because that's where the real excitement is. But just the actual joy of the sporting events and the chance to have these 11, 12 Saturdays and participate in them and be part of them, it's a great thing. And I love seeing the fans take full advantage of it. So kudos to Oklahoma, Missouri, and all the fans who showed up and had fun.
And Pat Forte got a little honor.
Award.
Right?
A distinguished alumni? What are you?
How about that?
An extinguished alumni, I think.
No, what was it? What'd you win? You won an alumni award.
Yes, it's an alumni award. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Listen, don't downplay it. A, congratulations. You should be honored to win the award. Missouri should have given you that. B, this is proof you actually did graduate, which I didn't think. congratulations. Yeah, no, we give each other a lot of crap on here, but you are a distinguished alum of Missouri. Congratulations.
That probably just means I'm being targeted for donations.
Yeah.
At this point, it's estate planning, buddy. It's estate planning.
They need that cash money for that rev share, you know?
Oh, yeah.
We need the donations, man.
I had an old guy say, you know you're old when you're college, when you're at a thing like that, and one of them goes, have you ever considered estate planning? You guys are trying to get me while I'm dead?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kids don't need that money.
What do they call it? I'm struggling. Struggling here.
You did well.
Your plot. You know, your plot in the old cemetery.
In that's the cemetery plot. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Pat, your plot. Bury Pat either by those columns or Harpo's. One of the two.
Yeah. Yes.
But
yes.
Harpo's would be more appropriate.
I thought you're a distinguished alum of that place, but I had no doubt.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ross, say something nice.
Let me say something nice.
Can we just end this so I can take a nap?
Let me say something nice about a couple teams that really started the season rough and have righted the ship a little bit here. First of all, the Kansas Jayhawks, they lost 5 straight games, you guys remember, in September and into October. 5 straight losses. They led in each one of those games in the fourth quarter. They had 5 straight fourth quarter blown leads. It was brutal in a season that was hyped up huge for Lance Leopold, Jalen Daniels, right quarterback, Devin Neal at running back. They were playing, they're building the new facility, the new football stadium. They're renovating it. So they've been playing at a minor league soccer facility.
Yeah,
right?
the NWSL soccer stadium.
But this was just this hyped up year, and it just couldn't have started worse. They've righted it, right? They've won 2 of the last 3 and just beat Iowa State in a big game down there. So there's the Kansas Jayhawks. Might say something nice, and my second say something nice. How about UCLA? Deshaun Foster, they 5 straight losses as well. Right in the month of September and into October, they have now won 3 straight. Dan, they won at Rutgers, they won at Nebraska, and they just beat Iowa at home. And they are playing pretty solid defense. Deshaun Foster's got them turned around there. It's been one of the, I would say, more surprising midseason turnarounds that we've seen this year.
All right, so I'm going to say something mean to both of you. Pat mentions Army, steals my first say something nice. You mentioned UCLA, steals my second say something nice.
You're welcome,
I ain't got
Dan.
More nice things to say.
You're welcome.
A lot of nice things. No, well, I agree. You know, we called it on UCLA. We talked about it in the last pod. Like, this team, look who you're losing to. And It's like, hey, this team isn't bad. And Sean Foster, really interesting coaching prospect. I like that team looks good. They run good stuff. I think he's going to do really well in recruiting. He's from LA. He's casts a totally different thing. And UCLA, USC's recruiting like nationally. They're trying to get everyone. If UCLA concentrates on local talent in Southern California with Deshaun running around, I think they can do really well there. You know, I'm not saying they'll win the national title, but I like them right now more than I like USC.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I'm glad both of you guys mentioned that because you love to see teams that don't just pack it in. And I think UCLA and Kansas, great examples of that, of like, yeah, we're going to keep playing, turn this thing around.
I don't know what to say now. I'm out of nice things. Washington State, 8-1 continues. Good job by Quinn Ewers this weekend, 8-1. Yeah, here's my say something nice. I'm going to go a little bit with Pat. This sport is absolutely popping. It's booming. It's fascinating. You don't know what's coming. This is the most exciting this sport to me I've covered in a long time. There was this 2007 season that was totally bonkers. I think Boston College was ranked second at one point. Okay, yeah. Like everybody lost. LSU got in the playoff with the two losses, but the way this sport is topsy-turvy, the way almost anyone could beat anyone any week, the 10 non-top 10, the 10 unranked teams that have beaten top 10 teams, the fact Georgia doesn't just control, oh boy, we got all these players, don't worry. The excitement, the field stormings all over the field in November, the excitement in November. I will say something nice to that and something not nice to anyone trying to reform it, be careful. Don't change a damn thing. And please do not lobby Congress based on the testimony that you provided 3 years ago that said this was going to be terrible. And this was not going to be competitive. And there was not going to be a level playing field. Or this isn't how we want to do things. It's working. It is. This sport could not be better right now. We might have an 8-way tie in the SEC. Are you kidding me? Like, this is great. Don't change a damn thing unless you absolutely somehow have to under court order. Because if you going
they might
back
have to under
the,
court order,
they might, but they don't have
a lot
to
of court it. Orders recently.
There has been a lot of court orders. I understand you got to do something, but you don't have to say we want to go back to how it was. The transfer portal and NIL have been an unbelievable boon for this competitive balance and excitement of this sport. And this 12-team playoff is at the perfect time. It is a rocket fuel sport right now. Do not go back to those old state, those old congressional hearings from 3 years ago. Almost everything that got said was wrong. And so be careful with our sport, please, because it's awesome right now. That's my say something nice.
Well,
I was going to leave
Dan.
Positively, but
well said.
And God bless the United States of America, and God bless our troops. That's I don't know. Got to say the troops first, right? I don't know. However the hell you win. All right. Hey,
nap time.
I'll say something nice. There wasn't a single political ad all weekend. It was fantastic. I was so excited to see Flo. I was like, hey, Flo. Hey, that guy, don't be your parents, whatever, that insurance one. I was like, this is great. I've been missing that guy. Where's he been? Right? I was like, Flo's back. I never thought I'd be excited to see Flo and Jake from State Farm. But there they were on my TV. Thank you.
Beautiful. Yes.
Beautiful. Beautiful weekend of college football. We'll be back Tuesday to discuss the next beautiful week of college football. So continue to share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. And thanks for having fun with us. We have a good time. Even hungover. Right, Ross?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Talk to you later.